or some challenges with a beverage brand that you didn't really expect when you started?
Oh, great question. We've had a production run fail, which cost thousands and thousands of dollars. We had a warehouse fire a couple of hours after our production run finished, and we lost 50,000 cans and $250,000 worth of inventory. That's like sales. There has been so many challenges, and sometimes you feel like you get a couple of steps forward and then a couple of steps back, but I'm addicted to this business and I love it, and I'm, you know, so committed to seeing it grow.
You guys grew from 20 independent stores to over 1,000 stores in just a year. How did you do that?
It blows my mind a little bit too. And we had to take a bit of a different approach because, again, to stand out, there's a million different bed fridges. But to get the attention of the retailers was the different strategy that we took.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Duck Pond, the show where we highlight incredible founder stories on how they built their brand. Today, we're sitting down with Amy Bett, co-founder of Mellow, the sparkling kava drink that promises calm, clarity, and social ease in under 10 minutes. With zero sugar, zero calories, and absolutely no hangovers. Amy created Mellow because people are cutting back on drinking alcohol. But most non-alcoholic drinks don't actually do anything. Mellow fixes that by tapping into kava, a century-old South Pacific root known for its relaxing effects. In just under a year, she's went from 20 local stores to over 1,000 stores across the United States. Today, we're talking about building a beverage that actually delivers on its promise, navigating the chaos of the non-alcoholic boom, and how Mellow is redefining what it means to drink to your health. Amy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason. I'm thrilled to be here, and thanks for the introduction.
I wanted to bring you onto the show because you're actually the first beverage brand on our show. We're a pretty new show. We're on our first season, but I've always been very fascinated about this category. And I know that there's a lot of studies, a lot of trends about people cutting back on alcohol, in particular in the Gen Z and in my age group. And I actually found myself stopped drinking as often as I used to, and really cutting that back, you know, feeling the effects of the hangover, feeling the effects of, you know, how I feel the next day. What made you get into the non-alcoholic space as opposed to making a drink for the probiotics, making a drink for energy? What got you into kava?
Yeah, great question. I mean, to start with, I never ever thought that I would create a product, or let alone a beverage, which in my opinion, and I've heard a lot, that it's one of the hardest categories in CPG to do and to do well. So I genuinely made the product because of a personal need. I was at a stage in my life where I have three daughters. I was running a really busy, growing, scaling online business. And I also was a breadwinner of my family because my husband had suffered a brain injury that ended his corporate career. So I was at a point where I'm like, I need to be a high performer. I need to make almost a double income for my family so that my family doesn't suffer, if that's the right word. Maybe that's, you know, exaggerating a little bit, but, you know, so I can give them what I'd always envisioned to give them. But I felt exactly what you said before, that alcohol was slowing me down. It was making me feel pretty crappy in the mornings. I still drink alcohol sometimes. I'm not like sober, and I don't really, I mean, unless there's a full problem there, I don't care about labels too much. I don't think you have to be one way or the other, but I knew that personally I wanted to cut back on alcohol. But the problem that I felt, and I was living in Australia at the time, was that there weren't other non-alcoholic drinks that actually gave you an effect. And because I wasn't just drinking socially, I was drinking to ease the tension and the stress that I was feeling in my body and, you know, my mind from my lifestyle, I was looking for something that could do both, something that I could drink during the day if I wanted to, and something that I could drink in the evenings, whether I was with friends or just cooking dinner and shifting from work, you know, woman into motherhood. And so I found out about kava, and you gave a really good introduction about what kava is. It's a plant from the Pacific Islands. It gives you a nice, calming, relaxing effect. And the beautiful thing about kava is that it doesn't inebriate you. It doesn't make you high. It's not addictive. So you're not going to feel drunk or anything. You're just going to feel a calm sense of ease through your body. So I almost like to talk about it like liquid courage. Like, you know, you drink it, it makes you feel calm and back to peace and back to normal. So then you can go and do what you need to do rather than feeling like overwhelmed and tense and stressed, or, you know, that kind of sense of even a social anxiousness. So that's why I created the drink.
It's like having a glass of wine, you know, end your day, relax a little bit. And for people who don't want to drink wine, I think this will be a great alternative. I want to get a little bit into about how you found kava. Like, is kava native to Australia? I don't really think so, right?
No, it's not native to Australia, but it's not too far away. So the Pacific Islands, like Fiji, is about a 4-hour flight. And because it's reasonably close, it's a very popular holiday destination for Australians. And so I had been to Vanuatu, one of the Pacific Islands, when I was about 19, and I experienced kava there for myself. And then actually one of my friends from school, who is a major shareholder of the business, their family had a kava farm as well. So we at the time decided to see if we could make a kava drink that actually tastes good, because that's the challenge with kava. For anyone that's tried it in its traditional form, it's bitter and earthy. It kind of looks a bit like muddy water when you grind it up. So it's not necessarily that mass market appealing, but the effect is so wonderful. So we just thought if we could master that, then we would have a gap in the market, and that's something that was really worthwhile going after and delivering.
And I know that you are building this business while having three kids with your husband around. How involved were they in the development of the brand?
The kids weren't really involved in the development of the brand, except for, you know, watching mum go out and do things. My husband has always been really involved in everything that I do. Because of his injury, he had to step out of his corporate career, but it also meant that I had to as well. We actually both worked for the same global retailer, the Cotton On Group. And so since that point in 2017, we've actually worked together in business. So obviously there was a point where he couldn't do anything at all, but over time he had some more capacity come back. And so we've kind of been a little duo since then. And, you know, he's kind of followed every adventure that I've been on. And I'm so grateful, because we have such opposite skill sets. He's very data, numbers, which I also now love numbers, but he can actually put them into spreadsheets and make them calculate, which I cannot do. So we work really well together, and he's a big part of this business now.
That's incredible. I would love to learn a little bit more about, from your perspective, what are some of the challenges with building a company, still having to take care of your family? You know, a lot of people listening in are probably in the same shoe. You know, they're working a corporate job. They are looking to build their own brand, but they have so many other life responsibilities that they just can't really step away from. And I think your story is a great inspiration for those who are in that same position. How did you navigate that?
Look, it's something that I still deal with every day. It's really, really difficult. And there are moments that are harder than other moments. You know, there's always time of push and pull. And so I think acceptance is a big thing when it comes to it, especially if you're taking on something like building a company in obviously like a new country, but any type of CPG company or any company takes a lot out of you. So I think acceptance that work-life balance doesn't really exist, and you just have to do what you need to do to get the job done and find the people around you to support you as much as possible. You actually have to be okay with having McDonald's once a week, or getting prepared food in the fridge so that in the evenings, if you're still in work mode and your mind's there, it doesn't cripple you to actually prepare a meal for your dinner, which I honestly experience a lot. So I think a lot of self-acceptance is good. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think as well, if that's not a lifestyle for you, like because some people have more mother guilt than I do. I choose the moments in my life, in my everyday, that is really important for me to be there with the kids. For example, I walk our kids now to school every day, and that is 15 to 20 minutes walking with them, holding their hands, talking to them about their, you know, morning, and just like really connecting with them. And then in the evenings, there's at least 1 hour a day where I'm like fully present, having a laugh, having a cuddle. And I think that those moments are really special, and the kids know that I love them so much. But if that's not okay with how you feel, then don't do it. Like, you have to choose a different career or a different lifestyle. Otherwise, you're just going to hate life every day.
And I agree that it's important to have those non-negotiables in your life where you are present, you are still there for the people that you love while still focusing on your career. I think it's the right balance. And, you know, I say balance, but it's never really a true balance of 50-50. It's some days 30-70, some the other day 60-40. And
That's it.
I love hearing that you're still walking them to school, talking about their day, because a lot of entrepreneurs, especially in your position where you're growing this fast, just are so overwhelmed by everything happening at work that you sometimes is so absent in your personal life. So it's good to hear that you're still finding the right balance there.
It comes over with time, I think. Like, I've been a business owner since 2017 now. And truthfully, like, the first few years of that, I probably wasn't as present with my kids as much as I should have been. But I think it comes with time and knowing that, hang on, I've still got 5 years of this ahead of me minimum, right? And I probably will continue on like that. So I better make some strict changes. Otherwise, my kids, I've got a 16-year-old as well. And so I have the foresight of seeing my child go, like, be 16 already. So my younger two, it feels like not a do-over, but, you know, in a sense, just making different choices and then putting more so into my 16-year-old as well now.
I love that. I want to get more into the brand side of how you created Mellow. When you were approaching developing this brand, can you walk me through the process of thinking through your brand identity, the way that you market the brand, and how to even stand out on shelves? Are those things that are top of mind when you started the brand, or were you trying to you know, make it as you go?
No, it was probably too top of mind. I actually think you can get too stuck in it. And I think there's a few core things that are really important that you need to get clear on, because you need to know who you are and who you're not. So, you know, we first of all knew who our competitor was, who our competitors were and what they stood for and who they were targeting. It was very clear that the consumers that they were targeting were different to our consumers. So that was one thing that we were clear about to start with. We were really trying to speak to a woman, a mom, maybe with kids, but maybe not, but a busy professional who felt the responsibilities that I was feeling. And so we knew that this brand needed to be light-hearted, fun, bold, colorful thing, you know, things that kind of made them feel a little bit more light and fun and bold in their life. And so, you know, that was important. And then we knew really what we wanted to look like to a point, but you can get so stuck in that you can take way too long, put too much money into it. Because what we had back then when we first launched is different to what the can looks like now. And actually it's about to be almost different again. And based on some retailer feedback, which was great feedback. And now, you know, I cannot wait for the new cans to be released and I'm so excited by it. One of the biggest regrets that I have with building the company is how much money we wasted and time we procrastinated on the look and feel of the brand, because it changes over time. And really you get the customer feedback. Like, the most important thing is to get something up as leanly as possible and get it out there, get the consumer feedback, because you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and years creating something that you don't even know that people are going to fully love yet. So I would almost have the opposite approach. But the one thing that has remained is that we still speak to the same consumer. We still have the same liquid and the same product that, you know, is very high quality. Is the core elements of our brand are the same. We just didn't need to overthink it so much.
A lot of people don't realize how expensive it is to create brand identity. They see a logo, they see the colors that you use, and they're like, yeah, it's just a logo and two colors. But they don't understand how much time and money it takes just to make what people see on the outside. And I agree with you that it's important to launch first. I think speed to market is crucial, especially in
everything.
CPU. And I think making progressive iterations rather than trying to spend a year or 2 years perfecting it, because you'll never really truly perfect it. After 2 years, consumer behavior changed, the way that they perceive things change. And I was also stuck in the same boat when I was building my own company, is trying to make something perfect. And by the time it was perfect, it's not perfect again because things changed, right?
Exactly.
I want to talk a little bit more about what are some like customer feedbacks that truly shocked you? Like when you're creating a new, I want to say a new category, but really popularizing a category, bringing into a market like the United States that aren't really familiar with Kava, what were some familiar or what were some reactions that you've gotten?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole host of reactions. And the biggest thing that I've learned is that you can't please everyone. And what I mean by that is every different product is not going to be for everyone, no matter what it is. So that some of the things that have shocked me is that, you know, positive things, like, you know, we knew that our product worked and actually does give the effect and has, you know, we're doing that. We know that because not only do we feel it every day, but everyone, that our friends and family, everyone else had experienced the same thing, right? But then in a positive way, you will have some people to be like, oh, I was an insomniac and I couldn't sleep, and this has like really helped to de-stress me and I'm sleeping really well now. Or, you know, I've cut back on alcohol so much that I've lost a lot of weight. Or like there's lots of different great things that you're like, oh, like I knew it, but to hear it from customers is very rewarding. And then there's other feedback that you get that's negative, such as, you know, it's so expensive, why would it cost so much? Or, you know, they don't like the taste. They think it's too sweet, or they don't want bubbles, or like there's just, you just have to find your crowd. And obviously iteration is important based on customer feedback. You have to listen to everything and consider everything, but you also can't please everyone. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword sometimes.
It's true, you can't please everyone. And I think the beverage space has a curse because for the longest time, the category was filled with conglomerates, right? Like the Pepsi and the Coca-Colas of the world, where the consumer has a price point of a can of drink of any kind should be $2.
Yeah.
But they don't understand that you're paying for quality, you're paying for ingredients, and that it can't be $6. If it's for the right reasons, but a lot of people, large subset of people just cannot accept that.
I know. And it's difficult because, you know, they need products like this and they want them, but, and you know what, like this is not everyone, and your prices can come down with scale. But if you think about it, we're in the numbers all the time even just to get it to the retail shelf, it's max 30% margin, right? And then you have to run the business outside of that as well. Like that's on top, running the business and paying staff and any other marketing outside of, you know, trade marketing comes out of that 30% margin. So beverage owners get very, very, very slim margins. You're not going to make a lot of money per can doing this. It's all about the growth of the business and the scale of the business. So yeah, we're not doing it because we can.
What are some challenges with a beverage brand that you didn't really expect when you started?
Oh, great question. There has been so many challenges, and sometimes you feel like you get a couple of steps forward and then a couple of steps back, but I'm addicted to this business and I love it. And I'm, you know, so committed to seeing it grow. And you know, there's so much power, or what's the word, like depth to our business, that it's totally worth it. But you know, we've had a production run fail, which cost thousands and thousands of dollars. We had a warehouse fire a couple of hours after our production run finished, and we lost 50,000 cans and $250,000 worth of inventory. That's like sales. Like we had cans crush in trucks that we paid for its own truck to deliver just our cans. We've pretty much faced it all. We've had flavors not be put into our drinks.
No way.
We've genuinely had it all, and we're still standing and we're still thriving and winning awards and doing all the things. So you have to be so committed. You have to just absolutely love it and be able to get back up and keep going, because, you're bound to be hit with unexpected challenges like this.
And I think what really sets apart good founders and regular people is the resilience against these challenges, right? I think most people just throw in the towel if they lost $250,000 in inventory from something out of control.
And we still haven't got the insurance back either.
No.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't understand how tough the beverage space is. There's limited space on the shelf. Things are super expensive to ship. You're basically shipping weighted water across everywhere. Your margins are lower. You're so prone to damages during transit. It's a tough space to be in.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're clearly very passionate. There's a clear goal for you to bring Kava out to the world. First and foremost, very impressive, and congratulations on all the success. But it is a tough category.
It's tough. And you know what? Like, if it wasn't Kava that we were bringing to the world and it wasn't something that was so beneficial for consumers and, you know, such a gap in the market, I think it would be harder to get out of bed in the morning. I think you do have to be really passionate about it and believe in what you're doing and care about what you can do in the world to go through that. Because, I mean, you could go and work for someone else and have a less stressful job and come home and be with your kids and probably make just as much money. I'm sure I could get a job with any kind of company and make a really decent salary. But it's not... I'm here and I love it.
You have the entrepreneurship bug in you, and
yeah,
what, it's really crazy. Hard to take that away.
Crazy,
it is crazy. I want to go into the marketing side of Mello. When you first created a brand, was there a particular marketing direction, demographic, benefits that you highlight, and have those changed over time as you're seeing how people interact with your brand and how people's feedbacks were? Were they the same or have you seen some changes over the years?
No, there has been changes. And it's funny because I think the hardest job is to get the attention of the consumer. Absolutely. Like you can have the best product looking great, but you've got to be able to speak to that customer and get their attention. And so I still think we are working that out. I think that, you know, our sales are good. We're getting into lots of retailers, which is awesome, but we're only now just finding our brand personality. And because you can say the words, you can say what the product is, but there's a difference in actually really engaging a consumer where they want to be part of your brand. I think that's so much more important than even just what the product is. The product has to speak to it, you know, up for itself. It has to deliver what it promises. It has to taste good if you're a beverage, and it has to, you know, it has to be beneficial to the consumer. But I think to build full loyalty and to build something that stands out against everything else, it's all about that brand. Like, what do you stand for? How are you different? How are you talking to that consumer outside of just the product benefits? And I'm really excited that within the next kind of couple of weeks, we're taking a bit of a shift. We've got a new way of kind of having fun with our consumer and a new lens on our business marketing. So it'll be very interesting to see if what new way of kind of acting, not speaking, but acting will do what I hope it does. We'll see.
Especially with a functional beverage like Mello, I think it's really important to integrate the lifestyle of the drinkers into your marketing. I'm going through your social media. I see you highlight a lot about the people interacting with your drink. And I think it's so important because you're not just another drink. It's almost like it's an alternative to the drinking culture, but you're also creating a new lifestyle where people are a lot more health conscious and they want to just relax a little bit with a healthy alternative.
Yeah, I would say I feel like we're halfway there. Like, I love the aesthetic of our brand. I love, you know, having some testimonials and people saying it. But as I said, I think you've got to have a way for people to have fun with your brand and give them a reason to talk back to you. That's the part. It's giving people a reason to talk back to you and like remember you and keep engaging with you. That's the part that we're like, okay, we have to nail that now. And I really hope that we do.
I love how you put that. I totally agree with you. I want to talk about the retail side. And I know you guys grew from 20 independent stores to over 1,000 stores in just a year. How did you do that?
Yeah, it actually blows my mind a little bit too. And we had to take a bit of a different approach because, again, to stand out, there's a million different beverages. And yes, our product is unique. And luckily, that's the fact because retailers have seen that gap. And that is obviously the biggest reason why we're getting into so many retailers. But to get the attention of the retailers was the different strategy that we took. So we had been given a buyer's list and we knew the strategy of which retailers we wanted to get into that were good for our consumers, but just cold emailing them wasn't working. We weren't getting the attention or the opportunity to actually get in front of these retailers. So we decided to go to Pitch Slams, Startup CPG, BevNet Live, Beverage Forum. They have them at Expo West. There's lots of different conferences that have pitch slams where you can apply to get on the stage and pitch why your product is special and unique. And that's what we did. And we got into, honestly, I don't think there's a pitch slam that we haven't been accepted into. And these pitch slams have like sometimes 200. We always ask because we're curious. 200, 100 brands apply, and we've always gotten into like the top 15. We've either placed really high up in that top 15 or won them. And so that's how we got in front of not only just the judging panel that we were presenting to, and often they had retailers in the judging panel, but also to all of the audience members are often filled with industry professionals, whether they're working in retail or buyers or investors or anyone else. And so that is how we actually got Carver out there in 12 months by doing that.
That's incredible. And I love your approach, because I've interviewed for this season 5 other founders already, and everyone had a different approach, and it all works for them.
Interesting.
Equally, yeah. I had another brand who was just pitching retailers by going through their contact us page and submitting an inquiry saying, hey, this is who we are, this is what we do, and would you like to have a conversation? And then I have another brand who is going to every single retailer, talking to them in person, asking them who their buyer is and getting the context from there. And then for you, it's through pitch competitions. And it just shows that there's no perfect formula. It just means you, at the end of the day, the core of it is that you have to go out and get it. No one's got to come in and hand it to you.
Yeah. And right? You've got to, it's a long game. Like some of those retailers we've been trying to get into for a year, but it wasn't until we actually were able to get in front of them and kind of, I guess, they had to listen to us because we were on the stage. They couldn't listen to anyone else that we finally got their attention.
Well, Amy, it's been an honor to have you on our show. And I know you guys are in Bristol Farms. You guys are in a bunch of retailers across the country. Where else could people find you in stores, and where can they find you online?
Yeah, so right now, retailers, we're in Bristol Farms, as you said. We're in Lassen's in California. We're launching into BevMo and GoPuff within the next 2 weeks. The stock's on the way to the warehouse, which is exciting. Sweet. I know, we're in Fresh Thyme in the Midwest. There's one in Texas that we're going into really soon. I can't announce it yet, but that's about 200 stores. And then we have a national launch coming up for January as well, which is, very, very exciting. And then outside of that, our website's just drinkmellow.co or Amazon if you like to order online.
I'm super stoked for you. I'm about to go get a case right after this.
Send you some.
Email you and let you know how it is. I've never tried it before, but I'm super down to try it now.
Thank you, Jason. I really, really appreciate the great questions and an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for having me.